Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
We don't know one case where a lion which was hand-feeded or bottle-feeded was released successfully in the wild. Of course, if they see humans and they understand that humans is the connection to food, it will be always a danger to put those lions back in the wild. And many of those companies use that as an pretty much excuse why this conservation project is important, but we don't think so, and we don't believe that, of course. It's, in my opinion, nonsense.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Daniel Call. He's the founder of Natucate, an environmental travel company that works to build a safer, more sustainable ecotourism industry. The ecotourism industry has been hijacked by a lot of bad players, and they're taking advantage of animal lovers. And some of the animals that are suffering the most are lions. Hi, Daniel.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for having us. Thank you very much.
Just say a little bit about who you are, what you do before we get into the lions.
Okay, cool. And I'm the founder of Natucate. And Natucate is a travel company that focuses on offering educational and nature-orientated experiences. For example, volunteering, internships, or in general, nature travel. And our mission is to promote sustainable and meaningful travel experiences that includes wildlife conservation projects, environmental education, and we want to provide opportunities for our clients to learn about conservation. But we want to offer only experiences where we can raise awareness about environmental issues, about conservation issues, and spread the word about responsible travel behavior.
You know, when we first spoke, I didn't realize the extent of how much voluntourism and how much of all this stuff that's out there is like not really helpful, but actually harmful to a lot of animals. And I'm sure a lot of other things as well. I kind of thought, like, especially from Western countries, I kind of thought we at this point, like, we knew enough, you know, that there was enough information. People stopped riding elephants. But what I learned from you and what I've learned since speaking to you is it's still rampant.
No, you're 100% correct. It's still a long way to go. It changed a bit over the last decade, but still there are many projects which they call themselves wildlife entertainment project or, as you said, voluntourism projects. And in our understanding for wildlife, it's a big disaster. It's we start with petting lion cubs or walking with lions or going to swim with elephants. The list is very long and it's with different animals. There are hundreds of projects which we would say are not in the favor of the animal or conservation.
Let's start with lion cubs and the whole lion industry. Again, this is where I'm ignorant. I thought this was getting better. You know, I thought Blood Lions helped. I thought the movie. Will you start like from when they're cubs and the life cycle of what these lions go through?
I mean, it changed a bit, but there's still so many projects where people, mostly from European countries or North America, pay a lot of money to spend their time to raise lions by hand. So they bottle feed them, they cuddle them, they take selfies with them. The issue is, of course, that those lion cubs were taken away from the mothers only after a couple of hours or a couple of days, actually, which is, of course, way too early to take them away from the mothers. And there is research that shows that those animals who got directly interaction with humans are under such a big stress and, of course, don't have the connection to the parents who could teach them about a normal life as a lion. And people who join those projects, that's the sad part about it, they think they do something good for conservation. So they pay a fortune to spend, for example, 4 weeks in those projects and to raise lions by hand. Often those projects say it is in conservation favor and that the animals were shot or that they don't exist pretty much. But in my opinion, that's not the true story.
It's a lot of kids, I would assume, who are coming to do volunteer work to feed these lions, and you're told their parents were killed or their mothers were... They must be under the assumption that, oh, they're going to help these lions go back to the wild, is probably what they're being told.
Yes, definitely. That's the story they are telling, that you will help to grow the lion and then they will be released in the wild. That's what the facilities often claim, that their cubs will be ultimately be reintroduced into the wild. But, I mean, they are not suited for the wild. They never really learned how a lion learned. And like, if you see a lion, if you ever saw a lion in the wilderness, lion cubs, how they play, how they get taught by their parents, it's completely different. It's absolutely incredible to see. But if you don't have that, if you don't really learn, for example, how to hunt or how to deal with other predators, I mean, lions and hyenas, for example, always have fights. And if you're not used to that, you're not able to survive in the wild. We as a company, we completely say that we don't support any breeding projects. Doesn't matter which animals. And we don't support any projects where you have direct interaction with wild animals. There are so many cases in the world where you can have, as a tourism attraction, direct interaction with animals. And I don't know one of them which is in the favor of the animal.
No.
And as long... And now for how to change that, I think in my opinion, as long as we don't change the market and the demand, it will be very tricky to change that. That people need to understand that that's not in the favor of the animal. There are so many selfies on social media and youngsters were shown with baby lions and then other people want to have it. We get on a regular basis calls from people who want to volunteer with us, and then they said, yeah, I want to work with lion cubs. And we said, okay, then we are not the right company. And then we try to inform them, sometimes even send them Bloodlines, the documentary, or give them the link. And sometimes they say, oh, we are very grateful for this, and now we won't join it. We didn't know about that, and now we want to do more research-based projects. But sometimes they say, okay, thank you, but I still want to cut a lions. And then we said, okay, sorry, then we are not the right partner. You need to go somewhere else. That's the first stage you were talking about or referring to.
Is this because they see, obviously they see celebrities or other people holding baby lions and all of a sudden they need to do it too?
100%. You see it very regularly on social media that actors, sports stars, musicians, that they, when they visit Southern Africa, that you often see pictures either with lion cubs or with grown-up lions and with direct interaction. And all of this, in my opinion, is where this story starts, that because then people want to do the same.
Are these lion breeding farms where these cubs are born?
Some of them are breeding farms. And if you look behind the scenes, they pretty much, their business is to breed lions.
Yeah.
And then they get money from people who spend their time and their money and think they will do something good in conservation and go there as a volunteer. And once the lions get too big when they grow and they're getting a bit more dangerous, then they start with activities, which is walking with lions. They have maybe one guide who walk with a stick and take day tourists on a walk with a lion. And then you walk close to a lion, which is an... Yeah, I mean, just from common sense, which is not the best idea to do.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, and that's the next level, actually. Unfortunately, female lions are pretty much breeding machines. And for the male lions, they use them for walking with lions. If they grown up and if they, worth a trophy, then they can sell them or use them for trophy hunting. And then there are different options how they do it. It's either canned hunting or other hunting options where you can choose in a catalog which lion you want to shoot. And sometimes it's close areas and very small areas. Then you can shoot the line which you've chosen in the catalog before.
So they just like pick a line out of the catalog, they put them in the field, and you just, I mean, it's sick.
It's absolutely insane. And then the next step is that the bones of lions are in some areas of the world are used for traditional medicine. So recently there were research and some good articles where they showed some countries and how much lion bones went into that country. And that's absolutely insane. And to see the big picture, lions in Southern Africa, they are highly endangered. So we're losing the space. We have a lot of human wildlife conflict in the wild, so that lions have that issue already. And then we have the other issues in captivity. So for us, for our understanding, lions are highly endangered at the moment. And we have in Southern Africa, the numbers, it's a, like there are studies about the numbers, but that there are more than 8,000 captive bred lions and more than 250 breeding facilities in South Africa. That's one of the animal welfare organizations released those numbers, which is absolutely insane. And the number over the last decade in lions in the wild dropped in like big numbers, so big time. It's going down really, really fast.
I mean, it's not unlike the US with the tiger issue, where we have 5,000 to 10,000 tigers in captivity. No, nobody knows how many. And there's 4,000 in the wild.
There are numbers around 23,000 African lions left in the wild. That's a number which was shared by WWF. It's just a rough number.
And also, just so it's clear, so people really get it, I mean, it should be clear because it doesn't make any sense that people try to say that breeding lions in captivity somehow helps conservation. They don't connect, right? Like the captive lions, no one's breeding them to put them back in the wild.
From our side and from our scientific partners in Southern Africa, we don't know one case where a lion which was hand-fed or bottle-fed was released successfully in the wild. Of course, if they see humans and they understand that humans is the connection to food, it will be always a danger to put those lions back in the wild. And many of those companies use that as an pretty much excuse why this conservation project is important, but we don't think so, and we don't believe that, of course. It's, in my opinion, nonsense.
This morning I read that in 1999, there were 1,000 lions caged on farms, and so now it's 8. So it's not, the demand's growing massively.
The newest number even say 9,000. It depends always which numbers you believe.
Right.
But if we just take 8 or 9, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are other numbers from a campaign which says that approximately 1,000 captive bred lions are killed every year in South Africa. Often in conservation, it is to show them alternative or other options to get income. And if your family over decades get income from lion breeding, it's hard to explain to them, stop that now, stop your income.
In terms of demand, right, because demand's clearly going up. I've noticed this a lot in Asia with elephants, where in the West, some finally kind of the general consensus became, okay, it's actually really bad to ride elephants. Like people started becoming really aware of that. But somehow when that message started to seep out amongst like travelers and whatnot, it became okay to give them baths, right? Which is just as crappy. The elephants, to get to that point where humans are giving them baths, went through a lot of hell. Instead of just going and kind of watching them from afar, this weird human need that they want to touch them and hold them and have pictures taken with them. And how does that kind of demand like just change? Because it seems like it's morphing, but it's certainly not changing.
It's a very slow change in my opinion. And you're completely right. If you stop with elephant riding, but if you start then with elephant bathing or painting with elephants or playing soccer with elephants, it doesn't make it better. And the good thing is there is light on the horizon because some of the big travel industry leaders, they signed agreements. They said, we want to have animal-friendly travel options. But of course, it's always a money thing. And I think to change big companies and big tour operators, it's a long way and it takes a while. But there are projects which are really, really well worth supporting, who tell the story, who spread the word, and who try to get those big leaders of those tourism companies, industry leaders, on the table to sign those agreements. And there are big travel companies who committed to ending what we call wildlife entertainment. But yeah, it is a long way. And people need to be educated in the end. People need to be aware of this topic. Because of course, if you see someone of your family went to Thailand and made elephant pictures when during riding them or selfies, and you want to do it, and if you don't get the information, so if you don't do proper research, then it's hard to understand, in my opinion. For me, tourism is a wonderful tool to support conservation efforts. And for me, volunteering can be involved in costing. So there's a reason why volunteering should cost money, in my opinion. But those projects need to be proper research projects, need to be proper projects who take care about animals. And in saying that, I mean to take data, to protect areas, but not for entertainment reasons, more for conservation reasons.
Give an example of what, like, one of those kind of projects. Say I wanted to go on one of those. What would I be doing there?
Depends which area of the world. But in the end, often the topic is human-wildlife conflicts. So that means that those areas where animals meet humans, we need to protect those areas. And often we need to protect humans and animals. So, for example, we work with NGOs together. They do research of wild dogs in South Africa. And then we send them volunteers. And they support the scientists on the ground. They take data of the animals. They take pictures. We do identify if the pack is okay, if the fences are okay. But always with a distance. We don't touch those animals, of course.
Well, I hope not, with wild dogs. No.
Another project in Namibia where we work with an NGO is they work together with the local communities and they build infrastructure to support their water sources because it's a very dry area and water is always the issue point there because elephants need water and the local communities. So we want to build opportunities for elephants to get water and for the communities so that the elephants don't need to go to the farms, for example. And then volunteers will work. They do hard work to build walls, for example, to protect water pipes. And on the second week, we send them out with the researchers to take data from the elephants, to take GPS coordinates, to take pictures, to ID the elephants, which is absolutely crucial in my opinion, because in doing that, we can offer local community members jobs, income. And then they understand that in protecting wildlife, you can create income. And not only with hunting, poaching, breeding farms, but with ecotourism in a responsible way. For me, it's an absolutely fantastic tool to support conservation efforts around the world.
When you're doing those kinds of jobs, you really feel like a part of the bigger picture of the world, right? And the cycle of life. And like it's got to feel good versus 100%. Like taking pictures with a baby lion.
Yeah. In the end, we see ourselves pretty much, we want to be matchmaker. We want to support NGOs to see that ecotourism is another way of income as donations, because many of our NGO partners are small NGOs. They are not like WWF with big fundings. They are depending on private donations and they are only able to pay the salaries of the local staff because of the income from those ecotourists or volunteers, however you want to call them. And the volunteers do get a background view of the work of an NGO, which are always related to wildlife. That's what we do. And they get a very interesting lifetime experience. And we have success, we call it success stories, but we have people who weren't aware of, for example, the situation of elephants. And we sent them to our project partner in Southern Africa. And now they raised funds here in Germany. They did, for example, like an evening with talks, and they collected donations for this NGO and sending money back after the experience because it was a life-changing experience. And right. That's what we want to create.
where people really are a part of things. And
yes.
And what about the people, the NGOs themselves? Are they realizing like, hey, this is actually such a better way too?
Definitely. I mean, it is always, sometimes it's a struggle because it's just handling expectations on both sides.
Yeah.
And NGOs, if they work hard 10, 12 hours a day, and they need to understand if a volunteer pays money to be there, that they sometimes can't work that hard.
Yes.
But no, 100%. It is, in my opinion, it's a win-win situation. And ecotourism for me is an important way to protect areas, to protect biodiversity, to protect species. And there is still a lot to go, but that's what our drive is, what our mission is, where we want to, yeah, where we want to be the matchmaker in the end.
Where all do you work?
At the moment, we do support projects on 5 continents. So we do a lot in Southern Africa. We do in Asia. We work in South America, North America, actually. Australia, New Zealand.
Wow.
We support a wonderful project in Thailand. We do research of whale sharks in Asia. It's growing. I mean, I told you we are now 10 years or turning 10 this year. And now our network of NGOs and conservation gets bigger and more interesting. And I think now, especially after COVID, people understood more that travel in nature and travel to reconnect with nature is more important than before. And people are willing to go the extra mile for those projects at the moment, which is really cool to see.
I think when people are in situations where they're actually just seeing animals in the wild, like that's enough. it's so incredible. Animals who are untouched by people.
I can tell you if you see elephants in the wild with young elephants, you could never ever go to a project what we talked earlier before. If you see lions in the wild, it's completely amazing. And that's why we need to protect those areas and those species. And it's not only lions, it's elephants, it's whale sharks, it's turtles. I mean, the list is endless,
right,
of those species which are endangered. And yeah, that's what we need to change.
The thing that's happening with the lions is now happening with cheetahs as well.
Yeah, that was interesting to see that. I mean, we spoke about tourism and operators that, especially in Western Europe, let's say 6-7 years ago, this whole lion topic was quite public and in the newspapers. So operators were forced to change their behavior. But then instead of thinking about the big picture, they just changed it to cheetahs. And then they had cheetah experiences. So there are projects. I mean, it's a bit different with cheetahs than with lions, but still, we don't support any projects where you can cuddle a cheetah. I don't understand why this is good for the animal. And if you keep a cheetah as a animal at home, it's not a good idea. And then you saw that the big operators just changed the lion projects, and then you saw walking with cheetahs. And then I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I had the hope that the lion message went through, but it didn't really.
No. The saddest part about all of this is most of the people who sign up to do these things love animals. That's why they're doing it, right? They're animal people, and they don't realize how much harm they're causing. And that's the message, I think, that really needs to spread in massive ways, because it's animal lovers passing it on to other animal lovers saying, hey, no, you can go do this.
100%.
That's what perpetuates it.
You're completely right. They think they do something for the animals, for conservation, and pay a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
And we need to spread the word that they do actually the complete opposite.
And so just for people who don't know and they're thinking about doing one of these kind of trips or do volunteering or any of that, how do they like just ensure that they are doing something positive versus something harmful?
In my opinion, it is a bit common sense. Do research. Do research about your destination, where you're going. Do research about wildlife. Then always respect animals. And if you see projects where you can cuddle any wild animal, it's not a good project. And then make informed choices about tourist attractions. I mean, we had these discussions about dolphins. We had these discussions about orcas, yes. And it's not only volunteers, even for day tourists, that they visit an animal entertainment center for one day. It's the same harm, in my opinion. And then, important, when you get informed or when you learned about it, share your knowledge with other travelers, share your knowledge with your network. That's what you mentioned earlier. And I mean, we can use social media for the good as well. So promote animal-friendly travel experience, promote research experiences, and support local businesses. And that's for me the checklist you should follow. But our golden rule is, as you see, if you see, you can touch wild animals, don't go there.
I hope this starts. Do you see it like starting to shift or?
My big hope is that after COVID, that the demand for big operators to change is much bigger. We can see it a bit. So that's my hope at the moment, that big tourism companies, not only talking about sustainability like everyone does now, but talk about animal welfare. And I know that it is a topic, and I just hope that it's not going away, let's say, in the next months or so. But no, I have hope that we will change it.
Because laws aren't changing anywhere.
I mean, there are countries who are changing the laws for example, for trophies of hunting. There is change, and the UK, there's a big debate at the moment about that. I know that in the States, there were debates about that. And if we can change that, that's the first step. Yeah. And then, as mentioned earlier, if we can inform traveler and spread the word on all channels, and if we get celebrities to spread that word, yeah, that would be perfect.
That's awesome. Well, Daniel, thank you for the work that you're doing. And yeah, I would love to go to one of your...
Yeah, you're always welcome. Please join us.
It sounds
amazing.
Thank
you for your work. What you're doing with your podcast is spreading the word, and that's exactly what we need.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
To learn more about Daniel and to learn about NatuCate, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We'll have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.